I'm from Winder, Georgia, and I am pleased to be here this afternoon doing this workshop. I haven't done this. I did this workshop several times quite a while back, and I haven't done it in quite some time. But I began about a year and a half ago. Someone presented an idea to me that I found provided a learning experience for me. It was an Al-Anon lady that had mentioned something about using the traditions as the guidelines for your relationships. And by relationships, those of you who know me know that I don't mean just close, personal, significant other, husband, wife, lover relationships. My idea of relationships begins with God and goes on from your mother and father, siblings, my children, my grandchildren, my neighbors, my co-workers. I have relationships of all kinds with all kinds of people. And upon arrival in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I discovered that I had hundreds and hundreds of relationships, none of which were good. And my part, a big piece of my recovery has been 21 years of searching for better relationships with God and my fellow human beings. I liked no one. I trusted no one. And consequently, those things meant that I didn't get along very well with anyone. I was not a popular person when I arrived in recovery. I was the kind of person that when you got to the meeting, if I was there ahead of you sitting in a chair, you made sure you didn't sit over there. There was the first month I was in recovery, there was usually an empty seat on either side of me. And that was because a number of reasons. Number one, I didn't have good health habits when I arrived in recovery. And number two was I was extremely angry. And people, even the people that opened their hearts and their arms to me, had difficulty getting too close because I absolutely radiated anger. It was a defense mechanism. I was mean, I was loud, I was sarcastic, I was snotty. Every third word was a cuss word. And that was the personality I presented. It was a defense mechanism to protect me from you. I could at no cost allow you to know who I was. Every time I had ever risked, I felt I had been hurt. And I finally got to a place in life where I felt I no longer could allow myself to be hurt, so I would not let anyone in. And I began to close doors, pull the blinds, draw the drapes, and turn out the lights. And people could recognize that in me almost instantly. When I came here, people loved me back to life. And so I have tried over the years to give out some of the love that was given to me. And it has remained my number one problem. My relationships with people is still today my biggest difficulty. I have all of the issues that Barbara touched on this morning. You know, I have the issues of control. I need to be in control. Some of that I could justify by saying is that protection thing again. If I'm in control, I can't get hurt. You know, but a lot of that is ego. A lot of that is pride. A lot of that is the, do I want to be right and will I die, you know. You know, country music is a wonderful thing. When I came to Georgia 13 years ago, I didn't know anything about country music and didn't want to know anything. You know, I am sober but still resistant to change and did not want to know country music. And country music was my higher power for about 6 months at one point in my sobriety because it's just so real. And there's a song now I lost my train of thought. Anyhow, it'll come back, hopefully, sometime. But there's a song, people wanted to love me and wanted to get in my life, and I wouldn't let them. I have learned, even today, that that's still a problem for me. the control issues, the pride, the ego, those things get in the way of my good relationships. And like I said, about a year and a half ago, an Al-Anon lady suggested this notion to me, which I'm sure I have heard prior to her saying it. It has been said in my presence before that, but I did hear it finally a year and a half ago. And she said that the traditions were an exact blueprint. The principles contained in the traditions were an exact blueprint for how to have a healthy relationship, how to heal the old relationships, and how to prepare myself for the new ones. And I thought, oh, I don't know about all that. You know, no one's ever said that to me before. And I'm sure someone has mentioned that along the line. I've been to a lot of meetings in 21 years. But I heard it, and I began to try to look at that. And she spoke in one of the workshops, and some of the things she put forth were like, wow, you know, this is really exciting. And so I wanted her to come down and do a workshop on it. And consequently, she has become an Al-Anon circuit speaker, and it is like you have to book her like 10 years in advance or something to get her down here. She's speaking all over the country. And so I said, well, hell, we'll have to figure this out, and we'll do it ourselves. We can do anything. We're women. We can do it. We can figure this out. So last time, my little step study group, we divided the traditions up, and we did a presentation last time on the traditions as a blueprint for relationships. And then one of my favorite people, Ginny D, she has this year gotten out onto the internet. And it's really scary. She is on the internet all hours of the day and night. And she's really just like into this. And she came over to the house last month, and she said, wait till you see what I got off the internet last night. And she had this big stack of papers. There is the Houston Al-Anon group, the Houston Family group, did a project that took them a couple of years to compile information based on the idea that the traditions could work in our relationships. They talked to people, couples of all kinds, new couples, old couples, and they talked to family members, and they compiled information and put together the information that you see contained in this booklet. And they recently put it out on the internet and invited anyone in any recovery program to make use of the information in any way they wanted to, as long as it was not for profit. And so Ginny came over to the house and said, wait till you see what I got off the internet. And what you find in this booklet is what came off the internet that was put together by the Houston Al-Anon group. And it's a wonderful study guide. And I put it together the way I did. I had it printed up and put it together for those of you who would like to take the book with you at the end of the workshop and use it like we use those four-step guides and those workbook guides that we use for other parts of the program. If you're seriously interested in looking at your relationships and how you relate to other people, this is one way of doing it. There are other ways. I've heard other good ways. But what I'd like to do is show you this notion of how to do it and see if it can't help someone. Like I said, I began this in order to look at my own relationships. And because that's why I began it, I think that's why I'm so excited about it, because I've learned so much in pursuing this. Because I wanted the information. I was not trying to save anyone with this information other than, you know, improve my own relationships. So that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit this afternoon. And you'll see, if you've looked through the book at all, that after each tradition, there is they have reworded the traditions to apply to what we're talking about, not in an effort to change the traditions, just simply to make you think about that. And they have also then written a brief discussion of what the interviews and the information they collected, what conclusions they drew from that information. And then at the very end of each one is a question and answer thing, questions that you can ask and answer for yourself that might give you a clearer picture of where you are at with relationships. You know, I did not know. I described to you my behavior and people's reaction to me when I came to recovery. But the important thing is that I didn't know that there was anything wrong with my relationship relating to people in that way. I knew what I wanted, and I was getting it. I wanted to be not bothered, and I wasn't bothered, if at all possible. People didn't bother me, you know. That was the goal, and I was achieving it, right? So that would be a successful relationship with my fellow man. I don't want them to bother me, and they don't, you know. Of course, I wasn't aware always of what the big picture was. You know, the big picture for me had always been a self-portrait. You know, what do you have hanging over the mantle in the big wealthy people's house? That's a portrait of them, isn't it? So they have their picture hanging out, you know. And that was kind of like my life. You know, I was the big picture. You know, I saw all of you in the whole world in relationship to how you affected me, no matter who you were. You know, whether you were my neighbor, whether you were a police officer, whether you were the President of the United States, there have been acts of Congress voted on directly because of me. You know, I mean, I felt that law was created because they knew I was doing something. You know, that is how I related to the world. Surely they met because they knew I was doing this and they made it illegal. You know, that's how I saw life. Because I was slightly self-centered. But I was not aware of the big picture. And so even though I thought I was achieving what I wanted, I couldn't see the things that were going on around me, the things I was losing, the things that were slipping away. Many an alcoholic has come here and said, I haven't seen my family in 10 or 20 years. I haven't bothered them. Don't owe them any amends, left when I was young, never went back. What's the big deal? What's with the amends with people I haven't seen in 20 years? And I was one of those people. I had not seen my family in many years and didn't want to see my family and never liked them, didn't want anything to do with them. They didn't like me. You know, this is my picture of things. And I made a decision a short time into recovery that If I did get around to amends making, it had been so many years that I could probably do those amends in a different way other than direct contact with family members. And so I made that decision, and I regret to tell you that I maintained that decision for a lot of years because I thought it only affected me. I mean, I wasn't bothering them. I was the one that did not have a family around me. Every now and then, I would see people in a family setting, someone in the program whose parents would come when they got their chip or something. And for a brief moment, I would feel like, you know, that's really me. That's really something to have family support. But I can live without that. I've done it all these years. I can continue to live without family support. Now, I have a daughter, and she had a daughter 5 years ago. And a couple of months after my granddaughter was born, we were in the living room of our home, and I was holding my granddaughter, which I did like 24 hours a day if I could when she was first born. And I was talking to her, and I like to make my grandbaby talk. From the time she was born, I would move her lips and talk for her. Now, that was out of affection, but I suppose that we could say there was maybe a Freudian thing going on under there. Grandma will now control how you talk. She would be asleep. You know, a baby is just so limp when they're asleep, little newborn baby. And if you move their lip, then you speak the words, you know. I love you, Grandma. You know. Grandpa is a shithead. You know, those kinds of things. You know, you can make the baby say what you want it to say. But anyway, as I was doing that with my granddaughter, my daughter was pouting on the other side of the room. And I thought, what's the matter with her? And I looked at her and I said something. What's the matter? Nothing. You know, nothing. My daughter's not anything like me. I tried to get her to respond to what I was asking her. And finally, it occurred to me. I said, geez, she's jealous that I'm playing with this baby. You know, and I was thinking to myself, and I said, Natalie, you're jealous of your own baby. And she said, no, I'm not. I said, yeah, you don't like it when I hold the baby. You know, I mean, I could see that on her. And she said, well, she said, you didn't do that to me. I said, how do you know I didn't do that to you? I mean, which I did do things like that. As a matter of fact, I did really dumb things with her when she was a baby. Because I was not well then. But not as well as I am today. But anyway, I said, grandmas do that. And my daughter looked across the room at me, and she had kind of like a blank look on her face. And I realized that my decision not to allow my family in my life meant that I raised a child who had no extended family. She doesn't know any of her aunts or uncles or cousins or nieces or nephews. Because I remained so self-centered, even in recovery, and so frightened of mending relationships that were so damaged and that I was sure were insignificant to modern-day recovery, Donna Jenkins style, I denied my child relatives. But it took me a long time to see the big picture. And so since my granddaughter was born, which is only 5 and a half, she'll be 6 in December, I have attempted to improve my behavior in relationships. And that has been my number one goal the last 5 years. It's the defect I spend the most time working on, because I became acutely aware at 16 years of sobriety that I was depriving my child of relatives because I didn't know how to work relationships even now. I did a good job with some over those years. But I also, my ego, my pride, and the thing I least like to talk about, my fears, prevented me from fixing some really important things. And it cost a lot of people a lot of stuff that I never intended it to do. A byproduct of my bad behavior is the price that others have to pay for it. And it is very difficult for me to look at that sometimes. Barbara said it this morning about being right, you know, and we can see that usually in a non-dramatic way in day-to-day living, who's right at work, you know, isn't nearly as damaging as who is right and makes a decision and never once in 16 years remembers that there's a child involved, even though I was living with her. I mean, I never, I made a promise. The one promise I made in recovery was that I would make a conscious effort every day not to ever hurt my daughter again. But I didn't know that my not doing this amend thing would hurt her. I mean, I just didn't know. But that's why this is so important to me. And that's why the journey has been my discovery thing. That's why I do the things that I do. I do them because I need to continue to heal. And have, you know, I'm hoping there aren't any more really big things that I haven't recognized yet. But I'm sure there's a lot of things there still to work on and things that will still be new to me. There always are. I've never not gone somewhere with an open mind where I didn't learn something else. I think learning for me is like food. I cannot go too many days without food, and I don't think I should go too many days without learning something I didn't know. I think it's part of growing. What you'll hear for the next little bit, of course, is what I saw as I went through this. And you can, you know, take what you agree with or disagree with or what you can learn from. I'm going to tell you, briefly run through these and tell you what principle I recognize. I think principles can often, you know, are sometimes if you read a step, there's more than one principle operating there. Sometimes it's hard to define what principle exactly it is. And I think that in some steps I wasn't sure, in some of these traditions I wasn't sure which one it was I thought it was. But I think also that all of those are correct. It may mean, it may be the principle of love to me, and to you it may be the principle of willingness or honesty or something else. All of those are correct. my principal may be right for me today, and tomorrow I may need a new one, you know. But that's kind of how this is, and that is what seals the love into the circle Barbara talked about. Those principles wrap us up in love. And it's so different from wrapping you out with anger, resentment, hurt, shame, guilt, and all those negative things that I used to seal myself in. To be totally self-contained, you know. What's a principle? What is a principle? Sometimes we say stuff. I don't know, but I always thought that AA speak was a foreign language when I got there anyway. You know, I would go to those meetings and I didn't really know sometimes what people were saying. You know, in the first place, the only thing I instantly recognized is that AAs talked out of both sides of their mouth. I mean, think about it. Now, they do, you know. Live and let live. What does that mean exactly? They weren't letting me live. They had me locked up in a treatment center. You know, well, you're speaking this live and let live. Why don't you let me out? You know, and I'll try some living again, you know. Think before you drink. I always thought before I drank. I never, you know, I had to think about where to get the money. Who is going to buy the drink? Why would I think now that I'm not drinking? I think better when I drink. You know, but we have all of those things going on, those things that say one thing and mean another. For instance, just for today, they told me I didn't have to drink just today. Was I willing not to drink just today? Now, not for one, even one brief moment, did I not know what they meant. They meant never again. Now, they said honesty. You know, you had to be honest. They were not being honest with me. They told me I only had to not drink today. And then you had the really cute ones that said, well, if you can't do a whole day, you could just do this morning or an hour. You could just do it an hour at a time. I said, you all have me locked down in a locked psych ward, telling me that all I have to do is make a decision not to drink for an hour. You know, you're lying. I'm either going to agree not to ever drink again or I'll be here forever. I mean, I knew what the plan was, but there were the AAs, you know. I mean, it's that kind of a thing. Just today, you know, I knew what they meant. I knew what they meant. So what's a principal? You know, I didn't know what a principal was. I mean, a principal was who I got in trouble with while I was still in school. You know. So I still have trouble with principals. You know. The principal at my daughter's school didn't like me much. And I'm sure that my granddaughter who started school 2.5 weeks ago, that principal probably won't like me real well. My daughter used to tell people that they passed her out of her senior year to get rid of me. A principle is a spiritual law. A spiritual law is, you might not like this, those of you who only want suggestions, close your ears because this isn't a suggestion. A spiritual law is a rule that works every time. A principle is a spiritual law, a rule that works every time. If you act in the principle, if you follow the spiritual law, it will work every time in every situation. Guaranteed. But you have to work it the way it's written. You cannot design your own principles. I mean, you can, if you get my drift, you can develop it and take it as your own and apply it in regards to your experience, but you cannot change the spiritual law. It is what it is. God is who He is to each and every one of us that believes in God. And like Barbara said, it is our own private decision who God is. But I cannot change the basic laws by which God operates, whether he is Buddha or Jesus or Muhammad or the spirit of the universe or the natural force of scientific energy or cosmic power. I cannot change the basic principle at the root of that. I went early in the program when they told me to find God. I too thought he lived in churches and thought I would have to return to a church in order to find God. I too was reminded that God was not lost. He also doesn't run an answering service. And I too sought out maybe a change of religion would enlighten me. I thought perhaps I would become Jewish and abandon, you know, go from Catholicism to Judaism. After all, Christ was a Jew, or his mother was at any rate. I was a child of the 50s, 60s. We had a lot of love and free spirits and stuff like that, so I thought perhaps the Buddhists. One thing I did find is that there were three basic rules to every religion that I looked into, whether it was a traditional or a non-traditional religion. And that was belief in love in a higher power, belief in love in myself, and belief in love in my fellow man. And no matter what I picked, I could not change those basic things. They were at the bottom of everything I studied. I took some courses and things like that, and it always led back to those same things nailed to the wall in the room of your home group. Live and let live. Do unto others. This too shall pass. It's the same things. The Sermon on the Mount is the 12 steps. Go read it. Go study it. It's the same. The talisman. Look at what it's telling you how to live, the correct way to live. Go and find out. Seek for yourself. Get your own answers. But you will find that some things are the same. So in these traditions, I'll go through and I'll tell you what I saw as I read them, and then you can decide what it is for you. The principles that I picked up as I read. Tradition 1, our common welfare comes first. A healthy relationship depends upon unity. And I saw in that the principle of unity. The greatest good for the greatest number is our goal. The greatest good for the greatest number. In a family setting, is it what's good for the husband, what's good for the wife, what's only good for the baby? How are decisions made in your family? Are they based on the greatest good for the greatest goal? What, you know, how's money handled? Is it handled on the principle of unity? First things first. It's extremely difficult, unless you're a balanced personality, to participate in a group conscience. Unbalanced personalities don't know how to have group consciences. So consequently, those of you that have ever sat through a group conscience meeting, sometimes it can like either curl your hair if it was straight, or straighten your hair if it was curly. People who come with good intentions to do service work, and they want to kill each other halfway through the meeting because they can't make each other agree with the other one. And you look around the room and people are not speaking. We had a thing once at 8111 about should it be smoking or non-smoking. And people were putting cigarettes out on the floor, and the non-smokers were throwing the ashtrays in the garbage, and people were blowing smoke at each other and screaming at one another, you know. And we could not quite get a group conscience. And the non-smokers were in control of the board of the building at the time, and so if they didn't like the way the vote came out, they would mail out another vote a month later, you know, and on it went. Well, I don't think any of us were operating under the principle of unity. None of us. We were all mad. We only went to the meetings to prove a point. I went regularly so I could smoke. I had forgotten why I was going, but I knew I was going to show up and smoke a pack of cigarettes in less than an hour. And I was going to sit, we did the room thing, you know, where half the room smoked, the other half didn't. And so I was going to sit in the closest seat to the non-smoking section and smoke my pack of cigarettes. If I could have stomached them, I swear I'd have smoked cigars during that period of time, because that's how I felt. You know, none of us were even thinking for a minute about the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And the greatest good in that particular situation had nothing to do with smoking or non-smoking. It had to do with the fact that if we alienated each other enough, we'd all die drunk. So you can see how our relationships can get really warped if I don't stick to the principle of unity. In my house live three women. Those of you who know us, as Mary Beth is already laughing, we have Donna, Donna Jr., and Donna the Third. We talk alike. We move our hands alike. We point our finger alike. My granddaughter does her hair like me. We all talk simultaneously. We are 5, 25, and over 40, and we are all always right. Even if we have three different opinions on a topic. I think bedtime for Dory is at this time. Natalie, her mother, thinks it's at this time. And, of course, Dory has her opinion on when bedtime is. And we all talk simultaneously. She'd been in school 3 weeks. My daughter's had to go three times. The major complaint is she talks all the time. Can you imagine the quandary my daughter and I have about how to discipline for this particular problem? What is appropriate discipline for a 5-year-old adult we have raised and taught to talk all the time? Now we're going to spend the next 5 years trying to teach her not to talk when other people are talking. Well, why? We do it at home. You know, you talk when I'm talking, Graham. Why should I not talk when the teacher's talking? You know, but can you see the greatest good for the greatest number of people? It's got to be a group decision. We got to agree. And I think, you know, there are some things that are a responsibility, which we'll get to. Some things are a parent-child responsibility. I must be a response. Sometimes I have to decide things for Dory. Like, Dory can't pick all of her own food. She can pick some of it, but not all of it. But I, you know, it's my responsibility that, and her mother's responsibility to feed her. And I don't mean to imply that I'm in charge of her food. I'm just saying, for our child, we have to pick some healthy things. But I can also give them a choice. You could have this or this, you know, and you could have snacks on this day and this day, you know. But they need to participate, because if we don't teach them that, they're going to get as old as me, and they're not going to know how to be part of a group conscience and decide something for the greatest good of the greatest number of people. But it is everybody's, you know, what are the needs? Do we need, what do you buy when you only have so much left over? You know, what's the priorities, and how are luxury items decided upon? This is how I see unity. If I operate out of this principle, I'm going to die alone. We have to stay whole in order to survive. And I have to have whole relationships, or those relationships will die. If I cannot learn the principle of unity, I won't have relationships. They'll die. Just like AA would die if we couldn't eventually overcome our differences and join together based on the principle of unity. Tradition 2. For our family or relationship purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he expresses himself in our informed family conscience. Each partner is God's trusted servant. Neither governs. Everyone in the relationship is God's trusted servant. Everyone. God has got to be the authority, or your higher power. I use God because that's mine and I fit. But whoever your higher power is, has to be the authority. I've got to be a trusted servant. One of the most fatal side effects of alcoholism and addiction and codependence and those things, one of the most fatal side effects is terminal uniqueness. If I am another one of God's trusted servants, I cannot die from terminal uniqueness. I will be healed of it. If I am another soldier, I won't ever be the general or the captain. You know, I must be a soldier. I have to be a sister. I have to be, it has to be sister to sister. I cannot only be the grandmother in my family. I have to be my daughter's sister. I have to respect her, and I also have to respect my granddaughter. I have to be their sisters. I have to be woman to woman with my daughter, as well as her mother. And those are difficult tasks to figure out. Left to my own devices, I always figure them out wrong. If I ask for help, if I get somebody else's input, if I listen to a sponsor, if I try something new, I usually make a much better decision. When I start figuring out what's my private response, all in my head, and then my little committee begins to meet, like Flower always says, you know, by the time I'm done thinking the problem over, my hair hurts. You know, I thought about it so much that my hair hurts. One of my sponsees told me I gave her a right brain headache when I talk to her. You know, I get a right brain headache when I talk to myself. You know, that's the problem. So I have to call up and say, tell me, you know, give me three reasons why I shouldn't murder her today. You know, I have to call up Jerry sometimes and say, could you please tell me why I shouldn't kill my boss? You know, just run that by me one more time, why murder would be inappropriate behavior. I had a son-in-law, and my daughter and son-in-law wanted to move back in my house after they had moved out. They wanted to move back in. And my daughter and her husband and the baby. And I wanted my daughter and the baby to move back in. But I didn't want my son-in-law to move back in. Now, I knew I could not do that. You know, I knew. I haven't had a drink in a while, and there's some things you just know if you don't drink. You know, I couldn't do that. I wanted to do that. And I had to call and say, excuse me, could I let her and her come back and not him? And she said, nope, you're not allowed to interfere with their family. You have two choices. You either let them all come back, or you let none of them come back. Now, I knew that, but I thought maybe something had changed since the last time I was at a meeting. I was praying that something had changed, you know. But it had not changed, no. Everyone, you've got to be a trusted servant. Decisions have to be, you have to talk about problems. You know, it's like the smoking thing. We never once talked about it. We took what we thought about it and wrestled people who didn't think like us to the ground, pried their mouth open, and shoved our thoughts down their throats during that time. Which is often how parents relate to teenagers. Yes, teenagers are like my favorite people. I'm now approaching menopause, and I really love them. I am very endeared to teenagers. I think it's because we're a lot alike. We already know everything, me and the teenagers. We don't really care what you think, because we already know better. You know, the teenagers and I marched to our own drummer. Somewhere, someone told me I could do that if I wanted to. It doesn't matter if they've taken that road out and I'm going to fall off the cliff if I go that way. I can go because they said I could go. Someone once told me I marched to the beat of a different drum, and I've tried to maintain that. You know, and that's kind of like a teenage thing, you know. They rebel against authority, you know, and I still do that. But, you know, that is how we relate to our children very often. Children are small people. They're small or medium-sized people. They're not like little wind-up things or little dolls or something. You dress them up and make them think and act and, you know, talk the way you want them to. And, you know, they're not little clones, you know. And I got news for you. No matter what goes on, they usually turn out like you anyway. You know, how many of you have ever been hollering at your child and you can see words coming out of your mouth and it's like those words that you remember when you were 13 that you were swearing to your best friend you would never ever say to my child? It's like, whose voice is that saying that? Couldn't be mine. I made an oath in blood never to say that when I was 13. Well, so they usually turn out like us anyway. But the idea is, if you want them to turn out to be responsible adults, you need to invite them into responsible childhood by including them in what goes on in the family and allowing them personalities, allowing them some time in the day that it is their time to do what they want. You know, these are things that I did not know how to do for a lot of years. I often treat sponsees like my children. They're not my children. They act like my children and I forget. It's not my fault, because if they wouldn't act that way, I wouldn't forget they weren't my children. No, okay. But you see what I mean? That's not necessarily appropriate. They're not my children. And I have to remember that they are an equal partner in a sponsor-sponsee relationship. I have to respect them. Everyone from day one, even before you got here, you were a fully grown, deserving woman before you ever arrived here. You already were a fully grown, deserving woman. You were not a child. We may have emotionally felt like children. We may have acted poorly. But the day you came, you already were a whole person. And I need to treat you as such from day one. I need to love you just as you are when you arrive. That is my responsibility. People loved me just as I was the day that I arrived. They asked nothing of me. They simply loved me. They were a bit startled by me, but they did. They were. Some were afraid, but they loved me anyway. They reached out to me and respected me as a grown woman, although I had not behaved like one in many years. I saw in that tradition the principle of humility becoming right-sized. Unity doesn't exist. Listen to this. Whether you're the partner that wants to be in control or the one that wants to be controlled, it's the same defect of character. When the partner wants someone else to be responsible for all the decisions, then they can be absolved of any kind of mistake or failure. That's me when I came into recovery. I wanted to let you dominate me so that I didn't have to be responsible for any more mistakes I might make. That's the thing where I won't take charge of myself. You have to have everyone an equal partner, and then it is actually damaging for us to take up your slack. Do you understand I don't know if I'm getting that clear. Even when someone wants me to take up their slack, if they are capable of taking up their own slack, it is harmful for me to do that. I can help you to do your fourth step. I'm not going to put it on my word processor. You'll have to do it on yours. It's that kind of a thing. I cannot do for you what you can already do for yourself, or I become part of your problem.
They call it enabling.
Yes, in Al-Anon it's referred to as enabling. Even when you want me to take care of you, people often say, ask me questions. Sponsees will say, is it this way or that way? And I try to say, which way is it? You know, you tell me which way it is. Because it could be this way or that way. But that's, you have to know which way it is. I know which way it is for me, but you have to know how it is for you. And that's having the humility to know what's my part and what's not. Someone said that there's three kinds of business in my life. My business, your business, God's business. Anytime you're not sure what you're supposed to be doing, make a mental thing in your head. Put three columns. Is this my business, so-and-so's business, or God's business? Put it in the category that fits and move on to the next problem. You know, when you can learn that ability to do that, you will find that you will have plenty going on in your column. And will not even have time for their column and wouldn't dare ever meddle in God's column. And it simplifies so many of those things where, like, well, I just don't know what's right. Yes, you do. You just don't like the answer. Tradition. I never like the answer. Tradition 3. Two or more persons, when gathered together for mutual benefit, may call themselves a relationship. The only basic requirements for a good marriage or relationship is a mutual desire to be in that relationship and a willingness to make it work. One person alone cannot make a relationship. There is no single person relationships. Totally self-contained relationship. It takes two. Myself will not work unless God's involved. It takes two every time. Two or more to have a relationship with anyone. So actually, if it's you and him, then it's got to be you, him, and God, so it's always three. It's got to be two or more. You cannot do it alone. I can't tell you any other way other than you can try it. You're welcome to try it. Most of the people here have probably tried it. It cannot be done. One person cannot make it work. Everyone involved has to make it work. How many of you have ever been on a group outing, other than like this, like a trip with three friends? Supposed to the International Convention in San Diego. Four women, grown women. A lot of sobriety, a lot of practice on recovery. Four women that love each other dearly are going to go on vacation to the marvelous International Convention in San Diego, California. They're going to divide up the responsibility for the trip. And someone's in charge of airline seats. Someone's in charge of the hotel room. Someone's in charge of Vanessa, you know. And three of them are non-smokers. We're going to share a suite. One of them is a smoker. Do we love enough? Do we love each other enough? Are we in principle enough to spend an entire week with each other? Can we make group decisions on where to go with one rental car? At what time? And do what? Can we all eat in the same restaurant at the same time? How can one person sit in smoking and three in non-smoking? And call it having dinner together? Why is the smoker the one that always has to go outside? Why can't the non-smokers go outside when we all have a cigarette at the table? Can we do it? Are we willing? Are we all willing to make this trip work? Well, we went. And we all came back alive. And two of the gals' husbands were met up later in the evening, and they were standing in the garage when we were pulling up, and we were laughing and getting stuff out of the car. And the one husband looked at the other husband, and he said, "Look, they're all still talking to each other." I said, "Oh, yeah, we know exactly what we can and cannot say to each other now. We know everything that we can't say to each other now." But we loved each other enough to overlook each other's shortcomings, to compromise. We wanted to be on this trip together, and we were willing to make it work. We had times when there was stuff that was stressing us, and we had to stop. We had to talk with one another. We had to fix the thing. We had to make some amends on the spot. But we were willing to make it work. I would have never, and I can honestly tell you this, I have never put as much effort into being willing to make a vacation work with any vacation I've ever taken other than that one. I was more willing to do the right thing than I have ever been on any trip in my life. I never was that friendly to my husband. If they didn't like smoke, I didn't care. You know, I mean, it's that kind of thing, but I was willing to make that work. I'm willing to forgive people anything. I don't care. I can forgive anything because I love them enough. And I have to be that willing in a relationship. If you cannot forgive, if you don't have the willingness to make your relationships work, you have no relationship. You don't meet the requirements. We have to accept one another exactly as we are. How many of you coming up as girls were told if a woman was right, she could marry a man and he would turn into whatever she needed him to be? You know, "Oh, he's a nice fella. I know he drinks a little, but that'll straighten out once you're married. She's a great gal. She really is. And just as soon as she has her first baby, she'll stop that stuff. That baby will slow her right down." We have to accept people exactly as they are and allow for, and this is another thing that ruins a lot of relationships, and allow for room for growth. "Well, you're not who I married." No, and neither are you. I have to allow for room for growth. Why would I want to be in a relationship with someone who never changed, who remained exactly the same forever? Forever. I have to allow room for growth. Now, this is that kind of relationship, especially a one-to-one significant other, husband, wife, partner, whatever you want to call it, relationship, rarely occurs. Now you understand why when a couple that's been together for a long time and they come into one comes into recovery and the other one doesn't, people go like 5 years later, they go, "I wonder why they got a divorce. He finally sobered up, or she finally quit that. What the hell happened? Why would they separate now?" Because both of them were no longer willing to be in the relationship and allow room for growth. They never planned on you changing, or I never planned on you changing. We do this to our children all the time. How many of you women face the first time it was no longer... the most awful thing I ever faced was the day that I knew my daughter had sex. You know what I mean? Like, really, she had sex. She actually did have sex. I mean, I wasn't there, but I could no longer use that as an out. There was no doubt she had had sex at least once. Because we had a baby. Now, she only had it once, and she hasn't had it since. But... if you get where I'm going, I don't want to allow her the room to be a grown woman. You know, it was difficult. Is it because I don't think sex is good? No. Is it because I never did sex? You know, am I against sex? No. You know, it's because I don't want to allow her to grow up. I want her to be my baby. I want to be, you know what I mean? I want her in control. I want her safe. You know, but what a startling day that was, you know. When I knew that I could no longer say, well, I don't think my daughter's having sex. But that's a genuine need. It's just real sick. You know, just to be. But we do that to our children. You know, we do that. We never expected them to change. We never expected them to have to think, to be in charge. Why do you think grown women can't ever live with their mothers again, or can rarely live with their mothers again? How can you have two heads of the kitchen? Two people with totally different decorating ideas in charge of the house. You know, I mean, it's just, it's because I never, you, we don't, unless I can make room for her to grow, she can't live with me forever. We have done remarkably well. But it has taken an enormous amount of love and help from our friends to keep us this way. To keep me from meddling, to keep me from harming. And I had to be willing to work on it. I'm sure she will be happy to tell you that I am rarely good at it, but I do try again. You know, but you see what I say? Because I want it to work for as long as we need it to work. I want it, and I am prepared for when she isn't there anymore. I want to allow her the right to move without me telling her how to move, where to move, who to move with, what to do when she gets there. You know, that is what holds us together. I cannot tell you how important that is. Tradition 4. Each partner should be autonomous. Except in matters affecting the other partner, the family, or the relationship as a whole. Acceptance of a higher power and his will for me and my life brings my life into balance. If I am not a whole balanced person, I cannot be half of a two. One half and two thirds do not equal two. And we insist on two fractured personalities declare themselves a couple. Well, we're in a relationship. We met in treatment. We had a spiritual experience. It's a match made in heaven. And this one is the one that's different. I know that most of them fail, and I know it's not suggested, and I know that people have terrible horror stories, but this is the one that's different. This man... a woman was sent to me by God. I wasn't looking for a relationship in treatment. I wasn't looking for this man. He just was there. He must be sent from God. What a concept. I mean... tell me you haven't had a thought along those lines. Responsibility for my actions is on me. If I am busy, minding my own business, taking responsibility for my actions and doing the next right thing, I will not get into a sick relationship today. Healthy people don't go out with sick people more than once or twice. They will date you once or twice. They will not date you a third time. We can usually keep it together for a little while. We can clean it up and make it look real nice. but we can only hold it in place for so long. It's like the waist, you know. Do you want your waist to look smaller? How long can your waist look smaller? Not an entire evening, I guarantee you. You will have to breathe. But you could go to the bathroom a lot and do all your breathing in there. But it's the same kind of thing with relationships. Sick people attract sick people. If I was sick and I got in a relationship, it's probably sick. Does that mean it has to be totally abandoned? No, of course not. I can heal, the relationship can heal. But you are in for a lot of work, and everybody's got to get on the chain gang. The work gang, the team, whatever you want to call it. And they have to get on their own. One cannot drag them on to the team. One cannot make your friend go shopping. They either want to go shopping or they don't. Would you go and take her, drag her through, tie her down, force her to try on hats? You know, no. She's got to want to come. You can't do that with your partner or your husband or your daughter. They have to want to get on the team. I have never once asked my daughter to join a recovery program, ever. She doesn't have, I have never asked her to do that. She made a decision last year that she wanted something that she says that I have, and so she decided to join Al-Anon. To try to get into a 12-step program because she was envious or respectful or admiring of the relationships that I have in my life, of my friends. She said she wanted friends like mine. She wanted to be friends with people like she saw my friends and I being friends. And she said, I think I'm going to join Al-Anon. And I was dumbfounded. I'm astounded. She decided that on her own, and that's the way it's supposed to be. If you want, let's take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come and talk just briefly about the other ones, and come and go as you please, and then we'll open it up for a little bit of question and answer and comment. Okay. Autonomy is the phrase that gives you freedom, autonomous freedom. This tradition is designed to guarantee us freedom within the AA program or Al-Anon program, and so it's designed. It can be used in order to give you freedom in essential matters in your relationships. Freedom is the response. With freedom comes responsibility. You know, I never knew that. That's a concept that I was not aware of. I always talked about wanting to be free of something. Free of my parents, free of the police, free of school, you know. But I wanted to be free. But to be free, I have to be responsible. Anyone can be free if they are responsible. And responsible to who? Well, to your higher power. If I have a higher power in my life, and I can turn my will over to the higher power, I can come into line with spiritual principles. If I ask God in all essential matters for guidance, for His will, and then I follow it out, I will probably not endanger my relationships. If I can put every problem that comes up in a relationship to that simple test, what is God's will for me in regard to this problem? If God were here and He was the one making the decision, what would He do? Dr. Bob used to say that when conflict would arise in the groups, Dr. Bob's one of his favorite phrases was, well, what would the Master do? If you've read his life story or read about him in the writings, That was his, one of his favorite phrases. Whenever conflict arose, he would say, well, what would the master do? How would God handle this situation? If I can, when I'm getting upset or getting controlling or getting obsessive, if I can catch myself and say, now, how would God handle this? It can turn my whole thinking around for the day. It can make it start over again. Always remember that responsibility for my actions lies 100% on me. I am 100% responsible for my actions. There is no one else responsible for my actions. God gave me free choice, free will, and I therefore am responsible for my own actions. If I behave badly, I do not have the right to blame it on anyone or anything else. Can't do it. It has to lay on me. Ego-driven relationship, or ego-driven individuals rarely have healthy relationships. An injury is when a person is harmed spiritually, emotionally, or physically by our actions. I cannot. I am completely autonomous in matters that don't affect the group as a whole, or the partnership, or the relationship. If my actions are going to harm another, then I can't take those actions. And it's that simple. It is that simple. If I'm going to do something that will harm another, I have to find another option. Now, do not misinterpret harming another. When I am in an abusive relationship and someone is beating on me and it's going to harm him if I leave because there won't be anyone to do his laundry, that's not what that means. Well, I don't really love them, and I don't want to harm the kids. Well, what do you reckon those boxing matches in the living room are doing to the kids? You know, if you cannot both agree to commit to counseling and peacemaking and guidance, and you can't, then it is my responsibility to take the proper action. I remember many years ago. I'm from a Catholic family, and the traditions of the Catholic Church were even stricter when I was a young child than they are now, the traditions regarding marriage and divorce. And my father was an alcoholic who abused my mother, and my mother felt that she couldn't leave. And finally, when the family convinced her to leave, that it would be okay to leave, and my grandmother said, you need to get a divorce. You need to get rid of him. And so she tried, my mother tried, to stay within the church's framework and ask permission to divorce my father. And the church refused permission for the divorce. And my grandmother, who remained to the day she died a practicing devout Catholic, said, you are going to get a divorce. And so my mother did, and she received a formal letter of excommunication from the church. And I never could understand for years how my grandmother could still go to Mass and still say the rosary and still donate money to the church. And how could she do that when they excommunicated? I never could get how that worked. Except for one thing. My grandmother knew exactly why she went to church. She never went for the man-made rules and regulations. My grandmother went to church to worship her God, her power. And she went to the Catholic Church because that was the one she was raised in all her life. And she was the most comfortable there. She never went to show off her clothes. She never went to see who was there or who was doing. She never gave money in order to impress anyone. My grandmother knew exactly why she went to church. It didn't matter what anyone else thought. She only went there for one reason, and it always occurred for her. And so she was able to draw from Catholicism all of the things she needed for spiritual growth in her life. They were available to me, except I could never figure out why I was going there. I mean, I was going because they made me, or they told me, or I had to, or I was going to burn in hell. I mean, I had a variety over the years of reasons why I went. I went to stop them hollering, you know, I mean, all those reasons. But my grandmother always knew why she went. And so she could live with that. So I think that that's the thing about actions. My actions are not supposed to harm others, but I don't make ridiculous assumptions. That's why it's so important to work with sponsors and sometimes counselors, outside help. AA has no opinion on outside help. Some people need it and use it, and some people don't. And that's a personal decision too. But you cannot do this by yourself. I do know that. I don't know what all is appropriate in each individual case, but I do know the one thing that's inappropriate is to do it alone. Can't be done. Won't work. Won't happen. Will not happen for you if you do it alone. So you have to make those decisions and make sure that you're clear on what the decision is. It's sort of the same theory of God sent this particular relationship to me. Each marriage, or tradition five, each marriage or relationship has but one primary purpose. To serve as an expression of God's love. I have a daughter that I attempted to raise for one primary purpose. To show God's gift to me. My daughter is God's gift to me. She is not my possession. She's not my property. She is a gift that God gave me to bring joy and sunshine and laughter and light and love into my life. She is a cherished gift of God. And any time I forget that, our relationship becomes strained. She's not my possession. My husbands were brought into my life for one purpose, to make me crazy. No. because they should compliment me. I mean, it should be an expression of God's love for me, someone to share my journey with. If my primary purpose is financial support, it's not going to work. If my primary purpose is good sex, it's not going to work. If my primary purpose is a nice, you know, like, what would you call that, an accessory, like a hand, a bag, and a guy, you know, is that like an accessory, you know, it won't work. I have to have one primary person, because two is better than one. Because two people working in the service of God or higher power is better than one. Because I bring something that will show my gratitude, that will add to my life, and I'll add to theirs. And I cannot tell you how many relationships I never, ever even spent 2 minutes thinking about what the primary purpose was and got it right. And so consequently, I have bad relationships of every size and shape with everyone. That is what the primary purpose of the relationship is. You can have secondary purposes, of course, but if your primary purpose is not grounded in spiritual principles, I doubt it will work for life to bring you what you think you want. To bring you what relationship? To bring you love. You cannot get love if your primary purpose is for someone to love you. You cannot get it that way. You cannot get that that way, and we almost all have tried to do that. We almost all have tried to get love. Needy and greedy. That's what they said I was needy and greedy when I came. Gimme, 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 and gimme it all. Not some of it, all of it. I sucked your serenity right. You couldn't talk to me for more than 20 minutes as a newcomer. I would have needed 10 barbers because I sucked you dry. I wanted what you had, but I was unwilling to work for it. I sucked the sunshine out of your day. 20 minutes with me and you were having a dark day. You know, that's how I was. Gimme, fix me, heal me, give me, gimme, 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 gimme. I did not know that I had to love to get love. I learned how love felt the first time I loved unconditionally. The first time it occurred to me that I loved one other human being exactly as they were, had absolutely no opinion on anything about them. I loved them and felt them in here. I knew for the first time in my life what love was. And I was more than 30 years old when that occurred. Before I knew what love was. And it came from me having the ability finally to love someone else, to give it out, put it out. When I loved, I felt love. It is indeed, like Barbara said this morning, the St. Francis equation. If I want it, I've got to give it. I cannot go out and find it. I have to stand where I am and give it out. That's the same theory that was at work when I arrived in this program. I could sit in a chair and not say a word, and my energy field, those of you who know, believe in energy fields and have become aware of that, I gave out. That's what you're feeling when you see someone. You can see a total stranger that you've never seen before in your life, and I'll point to someone who I saw for the very first time in my life at this workshop, and I never saw her before. I saw her, and the second I saw her, I said, my God, is she mad. She was so angry, and I was instantly attracted to her. She radiated, that's her energy field, sent out that message. And that's what she felt she got back from people. Look at the energy field around her today. Those of you that can see energy fields know what I'm talking about. What comes out there now? And what do you hear and see on her face? And what does she tell you she gets out of life now? You know, that's a classic example of giving it out to get, you know, and that's who I was. That's why I was immediately attracted to her the day I saw her. So my God, there I am. Wow, look at how I used to look, you know. And it is, you can see that. You look at the newcomers. And if you say you never see yourself coming in the door, you're not being honest yet. And then after you're here a while, look at the people that have what you want and know that that is you too. That's you too. I thought the tradition 5 was love, that the principle in operation there was that my primary purpose was to bring to the relationship in order to show my love and gratitude for the people in the relationship and God's love for me, to be an expression. If I have done anything right with my daughter, I have done it in hopes that it is a thank you note to God for giving me that daughter. If I have been able to get any part of that parenting thing right, let that be my thank you note to God for giving her to me. If I do anything right with my grandchild, let it be my thank you note to God for sending my grandchild into my life. If I can keep the primary purpose foremost in my mind, I will make less mistakes. I will harm less people. I will damage less of my relationships. But I've got to have one primary purpose, to express how good God has been to me. Everything I do in relationship to other women has to do with my gratitude for my sobriety. Anything I do with other women is a direct link to the ninth step of this program. Anytime I ever stop to talk to a woman for any reason at all in recovery, I want you to realize that I do that in the name of my mother, who never lived to see me sober. And I could not make an amend any other way but to say, to stop and take whatever time it takes when a woman needs, asks me for anything, whether it's to borrow a hairbrush, hear a fifth step, go shopping. I do that in honor of the amends I owe my mother and in gratitude for my daughter. Those are the primary purposes in my close personal relationships. People say say to me that I help a lot of people. That isn't my purpose. My purpose is to thank God for helping me. And so it is God that helps us. And if he works through me, that's amazing to me. And I try not to look too close at it, because I'm still a little scared of God. But that is what the purpose is. One primary purpose in all the relationships. And when I lose sight of that, and I do not mean to lead you to believe that I never lose sight of my primary purpose, I often forget people are even products of God. Some people I have met, I was convinced for short periods of time, were products of the devil. Or space aliens. But when I forget the primary purpose, the relationship starts to cloud up. And rain starts to fall. And I rarely have an umbrella. And then my hair melts. You know, I mean, that's kind of how it goes when I lose sight of the primary purpose. Tradition 6 says, a partner ought not to be overly supportive spiritually, emotionally, or physically to the relationship, lest problems of ego gratification divert him or her from the primary purpose. Someone just called for another break. That's an Al-Anon statement. I mean, I'd like to say it's not, but it really is. A partner ought not to be overly supportive spiritually, emotionally, or physically to the relationship or marriage, lest problems of ego gratification divert us from our primary purpose. Ego gratification was my primary purpose prior to recovery. You begin with, what is a baby's primary purpose? Feed me, give me, you know, ego gratification. It begins. Now, that's normal, kind of healthy ego gratification. I mean, it's part of us. It must be God-given, right? Must be appropriate. But boy, it's strange when you're 40 and you're doing the baby thing, you know? The like, I want what I want when I want it. You're here to bring beauty into my life. You know, no, you're not. You know? But, you know, that's how we think. Ego gratification will divert us from the relationship being a thank you note to God. Ego gets in, humility, love, all that stuff gets out of the way. Because ego is big. No room, you know. Can't have more than two or three of them egos in one place without everybody getting bumped up and bruised up. Communication is vital in a relationship. Can God's voice be heard over yours? Remember when I was talking about how we talk in my house? How often do you think God gets the last word in when the three of us are talking simultaneously? Can God, when you're talking in your house, can God's voice be heard over your voices? He has to work on it some days at 4 Sims Road. Our best relationship is one where dependence is mutual and independence is equal and the obligation is reciprocal. Fully self-supporting. Tradition 7. Each partner ought to strive to be fully self-supporting, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. Being self-supporting is impossible when one of the partners is the higher power for the other partner. If I am your higher power, you are in big trouble. When we are dependent upon someone else for our well-being, we are vulnerable prey for sick relationships. What would I have paid for that information 30 years ago? Just that one piece of, small piece of information. People are put here to enhance our lives, not to be our lives. If that girl in the corner is my life, she and I are both going to have a hell of a time. She is joy in my life. She enhances my life. She brings light to my life. But if she is all I am, what a burden I am for her. What a bloodsucker I become. What a responsibility, an unasked for responsibility, unnecessary responsibility I become if I live only for my daughter. If she is all there is, what does that say that she, why did she deserve that task? I'm her responsibility. It's her job to keep me happy and purposeful. Where did I get that from? How did I turn that stuff around? How did I do that? How many of you have felt that way? Well, my children are my life. Wow, what happens if you didn't have children? You know, what happens when they grow up and move away? What happens when they attempt to have a life of their own? Well, that's no problem. I'll just meddle right in it. She had a fiancé, and she was, they were drawing floor plans for a house. You know how you do that when you're young, and you do that, you're sketching out your own dream house thing. For grandma, you know, well, no, we thought you have your own house here, you'd stay here, you know. We're trying to get married and get out of here, you know. But you see what I mean, what that does to other people if we make them our lives? Tradition 7 says I have to be self-supporting. I have to make my own well-being and happiness. Children and money and clothes and jewelry, and that's a very basic lesson that we all have to learn pretty quick if we're going to stay in recovery. That we have to be self-supporting. But we always think of that being money, I think, or we tend to think of that as being money. But it is our obligation to work with my sponsor, to read my books, to pray, to meditate, to do whatever works. Tradition 8, our marriage or relationship should remain forever a free and giving relationship. If you have a relationship, think of how many of you in here have one relationship that you really like, whether it's with your mother, father, sister, brother, a child, a husband, grandchildren. Okay. Anyone who put their hand up, be aware that when you leave here today, that relationship that you like was a free gift. So you better give it freely. You better give freely. No strings attached. No price tags, no nothing. That was a free gift to you. And you have to give freely of what you have. No charge. No charge. And we can go through that. Well, I paid my dues to get right. Right. Yeah. We all did. We all did. We paid dues for all those dumbass things we set up to begin with. We all had to pay off our charge cards. The charge cards of life, I call those. You could charge up anything. You could get credit in life, any kind of credit. But the bill always comes due. Yes, that my grandmother used to say, I never heard it, never heard her say it. She always said it. I never understood when she said it. Donna Jean, you can do anything in life you want to do, as long as you're willing to pay the price. Keeping score in a relationship is dangerous. It is a judgmental attitude. What you give is what you get back. That's one of those spiritual laws that works every time. If you give it, that's what you'll get. Remember that. If you give stingily in the basket, you'll get stingily back. If you give only this much of myself in service work, well, I picked up 3 ashtrays last Tuesday. That's what I did this month. How much time have you given this month to service work? How much time have you freely given to make your relationships work this month? How much time have you freely given for no particular reason to make your relationships work this month? Healthy relationships have none of the following things. Prisoners, victims, hostages, police officers, soldiers, managers, jailers, users, abusers, kings, or queens. If you are any of those things, you are not in a healthy relationship. If you are the police officer in your family, knock it off. If you are the manager of your relationship, give up the job. If you are the jailer, if you are the king of the house or the queen of the house, get over it. If you are a prisoner in your relationship, escape. If you are a victim, stand up for your rights and get out. Or change it. If you are being held hostage, or you are a hostage taker, release your prisoner. If you are the jailer, let him out. There is no hope if you are playing one or more of those roles. Your relationship, if you are playing one or more of those parts in your relationship is doomed unless you can get out of that role. It will not work. Anyone who wants to stay is doing that and wants to keep on doing it, please do and call me and report to me if I'm wrong. I want to know. I've never seen it work if you keep one of those roles. 9, the relationship should be pliable in its organization, but our group conscience may appoint certain persons responsible to serve certain functions. In a healthy relationship, there must be some mutually agreed upon guidelines of acceptable conduct for the members of the relationship. Those are for you as a group to draw your own guidelines for different relationships. The sooner we recognize and act upon information, the sooner we talk about what's going on and work on the solution, instead of hoping it will go away, the better it is. The quicker we resolve the problem and the better chance we have of survival in that relationship. The informed group conscience should be the guideline in making rules. A relationship should avoid heated controversy, tradition 10. It should avoid heated controversy. Controversy is usually fired up by some sort of fear. The byproducts of heated controversy: power-driven anger, resentments, closed-mindedness, breaks in general communication. We have to allow each other the right to have differences and the right to be wrong. We have to allow each other that. We can't survive unless we do. Prayer on a situation does not always change a situation. You cannot pray a relationship into health. Many people try to pray about the situation, expecting that to make a change. Prayer is not designed to change that. Prayer is designed to change this. Me. Prayer may not change the situation, but it will change my attitude towards the situation. Sometimes the situation will change, and sometimes it won't. But I guarantee you, if you pray about it, your attitude about it will change, no matter whether it does or not. There are sometimes problems that there is not a present solution to, an immediate fix to. But if you will spend time praying, you can change your attitude. You can change to acceptance instead of resistance. You can change to tolerance instead of intolerance. You can change to love as opposed to control through prayer. 11, each partner best conveys his or her belief and philosophy by attraction rather than promotion. Anonymity is a valuable asset to the marriage or relationship. Do unto others what you would have them do unto you. And don't do unto others what they need to do for themselves. Anonymity can be the spiritual foundation of your relationship if you promote the relationship by attraction rather than promotion. If I continue to do the next right thing today for Donna, that is the best way to have a good day with Natalie. And I don't care how we try to turn that around, it simply won't work the other way around. I have got to do the best for me with the next right thing, the path that God shows me in the morning. If I can stick to that as my purpose for the day, I will have a good day with everyone I have to deal with. If I can remain in gratitude, anonymity is a form of gratitude. It is giving the thanks where the thanks is due. I am not here because of me. I'm here because it's a gift. If I live my life as a thank you card, I have half a chance. And 12, selflessness is the spiritual foundation of our way of life. Partners or friends ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. And the principle is unselfishness. The lady wrote in this book, one of the greatest gifts or privileges of Al-Anon is to be a help to one another of God's kids. We should not discount the messages we can learn in our relationships just because we don't like the messenger. I think that Vanessa shared with me that that happened. She learned that she could do the 10th step at work today. I said, oh, that's good. You know, don't lose the message because you don't like the messenger. Principles before personalities. I don't like what my kids are doing. Don't get after the kids. Try to find out what the message is. What's the kid saying by this behavior? What's happening? What's going on? I don't like why that girl treats me that way at work. Okay, fine. I don't like that girl. What's the message? Can I love her anyway? Can I be who God wants me to be? Can I accept her? Can I stop fighting? Can I make the workplace better if her and I don't bicker all day long and drive everybody else crazy? Principles before personalities in all my affairs, all of them. Let's open it up and talk about some of this stuff for the rest of the time.